Call the City of Franklin's Plan Commission to order. Mr. Fuchs, Mr. Sumwalt, nice to see you. You going to take the roll for us tonight?
Yes. Commissioner Knipple?
Here.
Commissioner Ritter?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
He might be on his way.
Okay. Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Commissioner Bennett?
Here.
Alderman Schmidt?
Present.
And Commissioner Pollack?
Here.
Please rise, join with me in a Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just before the meeting started, I'm looking at both sides and I'm realizing all the faces have changed. I'm trying to think back since I've been, was on the Plan Commission as an alderman, how many different people we've had on the Plan Commission. Although, you've been there for a while, and Mr. Ritter, you've been here too. You have before you the regular meeting of Thursday, June 20th. Is there any questions, comments? Not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Public hearings and business items, and I'll just say this, Mr. Deedle isn't here, but we are looking for some kind of breakdown between the public hearings and the business items. I think I've said it like three times. Right, Mr. Lewandowski? So, item A, Aurora Healthcare, Inc., continuing professional education, occupational health department offices. Mr. Fuchs, Mr. Sumwalt?
There is a public hearing notice for this item.
Yeah, I tell you, Mr. Sumwalt's got the microphone in his hand, so he might be willing to read that.
That's correct.
Notice is hereby given that the Plan Commission of the City of Franklin will conduct a public hearing on Thursday, July 18th, 2013 at 7 o'clock p.m. or soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in the Common Council Chambers at the Franklin City Hall, 9229 West Loomis Road, Franklin, Wisconsin, 53132, to hear public comment regarding an application by Aurora Healthcare, Inc. for a special use under Standard Industrial Classification, Title Number 8299, Schools and Educational Services Not Elsewhere Classified, to allow for a continuing professional education and occupational health department offices use upon property zoned M1 Limited Industrial District located at 11217 West Forest Home Avenue, Suite 1.
All right, I'm going to open up item 3A for public hearing. Are there any individuals wishing to be heard regarding item 3A for Healthcare Inc.? If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Kenneth Skoronsky, 8642 South 116th Street, Alderman representing the 6th District, which this building and this proposed company is coming in. Recommended. They'll do a good job. It's an asset to the community, and it takes away a nice empty space that we're all willing to fill in, and they'll do a good job. And I totally support, and I hope you will very appreciate all this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing on item 3A? Anyone else? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing. Just a note, and that's I just want to express my appreciation, Alderman Skoronsky, for being here. I think it's very important that the Plan Commission know the where the aldermen of the district stand on certain issues, so I greatly appreciate him being here tonight. Mr. Fuchs, anything further?
Staff is recommending approval of the special use for Aurora Healthcare. Brief description. Aurora is occupying 6,426 square feet of space. They have 20 employees. The use operates between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and the UDO parking standard is met, and they are not proposing any building or site changes.
Okay. Any questions, comments by members of the Plan Commission? If not, I have a proposed motion, a motion to recommend approval of resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for a continuing professional education and occupational health department offices use upon property located at 11217 West Forest Home Avenue, Suite 1.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Alderman Skronsky, and to Aurora. Item 3B, Franklin Public Schools, Unified Development Ordinance Text Amendment related to off-street parking. Mr. Hughes.
This item also has a public hearing notice.
Mr. Sommel is going to read it.
Notice is hereby given that the Plan Commission of the City of Franklin will conduct a public hearing on Thursday, July 18, 2013 at 7 o'clock p.m. or as soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in the Common Council Chambers at the Franklin City Hall, 9229 West Loomis Road, Franklin, Wisconsin, 53132, to hear public comment regarding an application by Franklin Public Schools for a proposed ordinance to amend the Unified Development Ordinance text to amend Section 15-5.0202B to reduce the minimum parking space size for public secondary schools to allow for parking spaces that are not less than 9 feet in width and not less than 162 square feet.
All right. I'm going to open this item, item 3B, regarding public Franklin Public Schools for public hearing. Are there any parties wishing to speak during the public hearing? Are there any parties wishing to speak during the public hearing? Are there any parties wishing to speak during the public hearing? Seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close the public hearing. And Mr. Fuchs, what is your pleasure?
Well, this item and the following item are both related to the Franklin High School expansion. This item, the UDO text amendment, will allow them to have basically 9 foot by 18 foot parking spaces as opposed to 9 foot by 20 spaces, which will allow them to have an additional 101 parking spaces at the high school, and staff is recommending approval.
Okay. Mr. Wesolowski.
Only that the subject matter was previously discussed at Plan Commission meeting. Part of the discussion involved fact that with regard to parking, I'll just call it Franklin High School. We have a technical term there, it's public secondary school, but it is an absolutely unique use on property because you have sports events, more than one sports events, you have entertainment events, you have educational events, and it's not unusual for these to be occurring currently. That's the basis for this being a unique use and a reasonable basis for a text amendment, which would only allow this for large parking structures for 500 or more cars and this particular use.
Okay, I have a proposed motion. That'd be a motion to recommend approval of an ordinance to amend the Unified Development Ordinance text to amend Section Chapter 15-5.0202B. To reduce the minimum parking space size for public secondary schools.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded.
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Fuchs, I have another motion here. Or do you have?
The following item. Related to the high school expansion would be the parking and landscaping plan revisions. This is stemming from a condition of a previous review by the Plan Commission. The high school has revised their landscape plan, the quantity provided to meet and comply with Unified Development Ordinance standards. There was discussion regarding concern with snow storage within parking spaces. The high school has addressed that. Snow storage has been removed from parking spaces, and they've added areas throughout the site for that. So staff is recommending approval.
Okay. I guess I would ask Alderman Schmidt if he would like to make a motion to approve the revised parking and landscaping plans.
So moved.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded.
Second.
Under discussion, just a quick question, given that you are the alderman of the district, and you did make the motion to approve, you support this? So.
Definitely. I think this has been reviewed pretty thoroughly, and they've made the concessions that the planning department has requested, and I hope that we're able to move forward with this project.
Yeah. I guess one other than that said, I just wanted to extend my appreciation to the school district and the administration for being patient, working through all this, and to the architect. And then working with city government, as difficult as that might be sometimes. So thank you.
I noticed the topsoil being hauled, is that continuing to be a process that's going to be ongoing for a while, or is that subsided? I know an awful lot of trucks going up and down Drexel last week.
That was bringing in stone from underneath. Okay. We're pretty close to being done with the pad.
Was that being transported? Was that from Payne and Dolan, or was that from a different location where you were hauling that in from?
I believe it was from Payne and Dolan at Rawson.
Okay. I had to circle around.
Just for the record, if you could please state your name and address for the record.
Mark Cloutier, Franklin Public Schools, 8255 West Forest Hill Avenue.
Okay.
And
normally we ask the suspension of the rules, but I think we'll let it go this time.
I'd like to move suspension of the rules so that we can discuss with the city of school district representatives.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. See. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Any other questions? Yes.
Just that we have an agreement with the quarries that we will not haul on 51st Street from Boston to Drexel because that has not been reconstructed. And as topsoil underneath the Old Town Road where Drexel Avenue has been reconstructed, we have a good base. So that's the reason that they have to circle. I had one property owner on Drexel that wasn't very happy about that, but I think he finally understood.
Good. Any other questions for Mr. Cloutier? Mr. Fowler?
Just a real quick question. We've talked about that trail over by Highview. I've actually walked that a couple times in different types of weather. I understand some of the wet issues now that you guys have back there with the drainage. But I do see that's still going to be the cross-country trail there. I still see it gets a lot of use from kids coming that way. Does the school district have any thoughts that they're going to do any maintenance on that trail? Are they going to put down any different kinds of amenities on it, like a wood chip trail? Are they going to do anything with that trail? Is it just going to remain as it is, a grass mud trail?
The part from Highview to the cross-country trail, we'd like to leave the cross-country trail as natural as possible for that purpose. However, we were envisioning wood chips from there to height to the end of the substrate.
Okay, thank you.
Anything, any other questions by the commissioners to Mr. Cloutier? If not, is there a motion to return the regular order of business?
So moved.
Second. So moved. Second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries on the regular motion. Did we vote on that? I don't think. No. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Nice to see you gentlemen again. I'm sure if you never see us again, that'd be fine too.
Yeah, see you in a couple.
Oh, you're going to be back? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Item D, Rawson 51 LLC and Priya Corporation. Mr. Fuchs.
Staff is recommending approval of the proposed condominium plat. The plat creates two separate commercial units within the Andes gas station and multi-tenant development on Rawson Avenue. Unit 1 will consist of the Andes convenience store, fuel pump and canopy, and the car wash. The Unit 2 will consist of the 310 spaces to the west and of the convenience store and the 210 spaces to the east of the convenience store. No, there are no cider building modifications proposed.
I was told that this is becoming pretty commonplace in other municipalities for this to occur. Is that correct?
I know it's common in the city of Milwaukee in the third ward, for example. There's a lot of commercial condominium space.
Mr. Bennett?
Is there a common maintenance authority in a condominium declaration, so we have an entity to go through if we have maintenance problems?
Yes, they did submit that draft document.
But there is a common authority in that, right?
Correct.
So they don't pay their water bill,
Yes, it will be the condo association.
All right. Is there a motion to recommend approval of a resolution conditionally approving a condominium plat for Rawson 51 condominium at 5010 to 5070 West Rawson Avenue?
Second.
6 seconds. Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Who's the alderman for the district?
Alderman Wilhelm.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's okay with this? Or?
I do not believe we spoke about regarding this project.
Okay. I have to ask now because the jurisdiction lines have changed so much that I think people are in certain areas and they're not. I was going to call you Alderman Fowler.
Not yet.
Okay. Didn't want to insult you. So. Mr.
I believe Alderman Wilhelm was here the last time they attended. I thought she was in attendance at that meeting.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 5 ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. It's almost, this went a little bit smoother than the first time when you brought the gas station in.
Yes. Thank you.
Nice to see you again. Avian Estates.
The Plan Commission did see the proposed site plan earlier when the applicant applied for rezoning from RH to R3 and a comprehensive master plan amendment from residential multifamily to residential. It was at the June 20th Plan Commission meeting, and the Common Council did approve those applications for the Avian Estates subdivision. It's a 13-lot residential subdivision, contains two outlots located on a publicly dedicated cul-de-sac with ingress and egress for Cutes Road. The lot sizes range from the R3 district minimum of 20,000 square feet to 32,730 square feet. The majority of the lots, I believe it's 8 out of the 13, are at the minimum of 20,000 square feet. The applicant is providing a 20-foot emergency and pedestrian access easement to West Greyhawk Lane on lots 6 and 7. It was requested by the Plan Commission. And staff is recommending approval with two suggestions. Because of concerns with the number of lots with small buildable areas and small backyards that are on the north side of the cul-de-sac, staff is suggesting that cul-de-sac be relocated further south or southward to create deeper lots on the north end. And staff is also suggesting that the cul-de-sac be extended to connect with West Greyhawk Lane to provide additional access. The applicant has indicated they're concerned with that. They would connect a public street to a private road, which and I think it is the condo association's preference to keep those separate.
Okay, I was going to ask if the applicant was okay with your suggestions. If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Joe Bukovich, address 13400 Bishop's Lane, Brookfield, Wisconsin. And I would like to address the issue of moving the road further to the south to increase the building areas for the lower lots on the north side.
You're going to have to adjust that. I can't move the camera, so you're going to
have to. There you go. Is this thing working or no?
This is not working.
Looking at moving the road to the south, you'll see this hatched area is existing sewer and water. And our one concern there is if we move the road to the south, that sewer and water will get closer to the building pads and have potential conflicts with sidewalks and landscaping. And that potentially impacts two lots versus making the lot on lot three or improving the one lot on lot three. And for the quote-unquote small building areas, what we did was just showed potential building pads something that was reasonable and something not oversell the project for building size. The majority of the lot pads are 3,250 square feet. If you subtract 750 for a three-car garage, you're still at 2,500 square feet for a building area. And the minimum ranch is 2,000 square feet. So that's roughly the range that we're expecting to see to give you a good view of what's going to be there. In terms of the building pad for lot 3, it's shown as 65 by 45. You can easily gain width on either side of that. And from our viewpoint, we view lot 3 more of a market issue. Is someone willing to buy lot 3 with a smaller backyard? And in our opinion, we feel there's someone out there who really wants to live in the city of Franklin that's working on a budget. And lot 3 will obviously be one of the lesser priced lots in the neighborhood. And you put up a two-story, and they'd be able to move in and live in a nice development. And for the through road connection, I think Mr. Fuchs expressed our concerns with that pretty well.
Okay, Mr. Bennett?
I did try a little layout where we just pulled the road to the south. I don't know if you even have to move the cul-de-sac, but you could. As far as the sewer and water, there's just, I think, one manhole for the sewer. And as long as that's in the front yard setback, I don't see a real problem with that. Everything else is underground. Chances of us going in there is pretty remote. We can now repair sewers from the inside. We're doing that relining sewers. Water main, there's always a chance of a water main break. But I think we could get that. I wouldn't put it any more than 10 feet from the house. But I think if we kept a minimum of 10 feet away from the home with the sanitary sewer, so if it ever had to be dug up, we got some room. And the water main more likely would be dug up if we had a water main break. I think we could pull this down and give a little bit more room. If one thing we found for having drives or accesses, when you give an easement, the property owner feels that they have a good right to that. If you have it as an outlot, where they have no property interest in it, they're less apt to come to the city and say, get rid of that sidewalk or drive on my property because it's not on their property. So we've had experiences with Red Wing Meadows. We had a fight with an ex-member of the Plan Commission on that years ago. He was just bound determined that we shouldn't have an access easement to the water retention basin, and planted all kinds of trees and everything else to in the future block our access on that. So anyway, I guess then if he did this, you could push the lots around, and you would lose the one lot, but you could. You could push the lots around because you'd have to provide an extra 20 feet. You could push them around in that last lot on the corner would then be 20 foot less in width. But it's always a problem where you don't have a backyard and somebody buys a house and they wonder why did the city create something that I don't have a backyard in? I understand you probably could sell for less, but it's going to go on the market and somebody's going to buy it and they're going to say, well, city, why didn't you provide a backyard for us? That wasn't very good planning, very good engineering. I guess that's mine. And so I would suggest that you move it such that the utilities are at up to 10 feet from the house, and then we give us a utility easement. Don't see that to be a problem, and I think it would make it a nicer subdivision. That's just my comments.
Anyone else? Ms. Fowler?
Just a question. You might be for Jack. Why can't there be utilities on the street right
now? The streets are already there. The utilities are already in there. This is a kind of a revision to what they did. So they put the utilities in for the condos.
Okay.
and now they're not going to build the condos. Now, you could move if it became a bigger problem, you could, but that's going to be expensive to move utilities, especially the sewer. No, the water wouldn't be too big. Which is the closest, sewer or water, to the lot?
The water's on the north side.
So, and
of the sewer.
Okay. The water would be easier to move, but I think water within 10 feet, the only thing that you have is you probably won't even have a valve box on that because we normally put that at the intersections.
Right.
So it won't even be a valve box. It'll just be underground. The water was there. I think 10 feet with 6.5 feet deep for water main, we could handle that if we had a water main break.
Looking at the easements for, I'm sorry, is it okay?
It's okay.
Okay. Looking at the easement language, I believe that you can put driveways, parking lots, that kind of stuff over the easements. Is there landscaping allowed to be placed in those?
Okay. Just can't put a structure.
Okay. So are you okay with Mr. Bennett's suggestions? Or?
I would rather not lose the one lot, and I think the extra tax base to the city would be worth a call or two by lot owners for not having a backyard.
Okay. Mr. Ritter?
Just, Mr. Bennett, can clarify your comment about an outlot versus an easement. Where in particular,
where the walk and drive is to interconnect, if assuming you don't extend the... I guess I have a little concern about transferring, having a person drive from a public street just into a private drive myself. If you had a turnaround, I guess you could have a connection, but if a condo association doesn't want that's kind of imposing public traffic into an area where it's private. But if you ended up not putting a cul-de-sac and just connecting the roads, and I think that's one planning's one thought would be is get rid of the cul-de-sac and just have it through.
In terms of comment of an outlot versus an easement across private property, yes, I mean, I agree with that. It would be preferable to that be the homeowners association rather than the two individual property owners that would split that. I mean, that would be kind of right. They would want to be a little, if it was somebody's private property, they might want to be a little more assertive over versus an outlot. So I think I agree with that.
And then they would probably lose that extra lot anyway. Because they have to give up 20 feet, and that would squeeze this way. If they moved everything south, and if we had the 20 foot, they'd have to give up a lot. This way, they still can push everything down, and still just have to give up one lot.
In terms of the outlot, and I'm aware of that situation. That's why I first started working on it. They said, "Hey, go ahead, help fix that." Yeah, and. The difference between this and that one is there was no path, and we're proposing the 5-foot concrete walk, and then for the emergency access, the geoblock on either side, which is more of a permanent structure for allowing for vehicular traffic. So it would be much more difficult to infringe upon that easement than it was out at Redway.
Would you like more time to think about this? We could move to table this item.
No, I think we've worked long enough on this, and we will end up doing whatever the Plan Commission's wishes are. But I would like the consideration for keeping the plan as is.
Okay. Well, I have a respective motion, but I don't think it fits. It's a motion to recommend approval of a resolution conditionally approving a preliminary plat for Avian Estates subdivision. I guess adding the comments by Mr. Bennett and the commissioners tonight. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Under discussion, Mr. Ritter.
Adding the comments, does that mean shifting essentially that partial portion of the drive?
I'll just put it simpler is to take the suggestions of Mr. Bennett and make it a reality, a recommendation to the council.
So it's add a 20-foot outlot for the interconnecting, I would say, sidewalk and emergency access, because I think we talked about that at the last meeting. and to shift the road to the south such that the water main would be at 10 feet away from the front yard setback.
So my answer to you would be yes.
I think I might be more inclined to go along with the applicant, but I'd at least like to see what the plant looks like after making those changes. We've got 20,000 square foot lots on the north. I presume that's going to increase the size of those lots. It's also going to change the size of the lots, I think, most of the way around. Maybe not all of them, but some of them. So that is a reflective of the plat that we have before us. And if we're going to, I said we should take action on that plat, or I think we ought to have a plat for the plat.
Okay, I think we have a motion that's been made and seconded. All right. Okay. Any further discussion? Mr. Fowler and Mr. Alderman Schmidt.
I kind of agree with what Randy's talking about, that we do need a plan to look at. That would be something that would be beneficial to us. But I also want to just revisit, so there's no possible way of connecting that road to the private road through the town. That's just dead.
Got rid of the cul-de-sac, they probably wouldn't lose a lot.
Right.
Oh, well.
No. Right.
They have frontage on streets.
The initial plan that we came in with showed the through road, and then we met with Alderman Olson at the time, and Alderman D'Andrea was at that meeting. It was a week or two before the election and everything. And we also met with the condo association, and we showed the association the through road, and it was really, really a non-starter for them. They were really concerned about adding public traffic to a private road that they have to maintain. It would increase their maintenance costs for traffic that that wasn't part of their development, so they'd be paying for city traffic. And looking at the potential impact of having the public road ending at the property line attaching to a 300-foot strip of private roadway, the public-private road connection would occur mid-block. There would be issues with plowing and maintenance. There was some potential foresight saying that, well, if you're adding all this potential traffic, that the condo association would want the city to maintain the road. That opens a can of worms for the city with other condo developments wanting the city to maintain their roads. And by pulling the cul-de-sac down to the south like that, you increase the appeal of lots 5 and 6. You get the more backyard, which Mr. Ben is looking at for lot 3. So all the way around, it was kind of a win-win, in our opinion, to go with the cul-de-sac design. And that's a little bit of the history on it.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Alderman Schmidt.
As Jack referred to, moving this further south, yet, but it wouldn't necessarily have to involve moving the cul-de-sac, changing the cul-de-sac. That would still make a difference.
I think it could, yeah.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
4 ayes, 1 no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to skip down.
Can I just say one thing?
Well, yes.
That I think when this goes to council, we should have a revised plan so the council has the actual plan to look at. They're going to be the final say on this anyway. So, but I think they should have these corrections on the plan that goes to council.
I'm going to try and move forward because we have some special guests that have traveled long ways to be here tonight, and I just did want to share something that occurred at another meeting just before this one. That's that one of the commissioners of the CDA said that he has been talking to many, 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 many people in his business, and that said one of the things he hears most often is how difficult it is to do business in the city of Franklin. Just wanted to share that with you. I assured him that we are still a very, very desirable community. Let's see. We have some very special guests with us tonight that have traveled a long ways, and I think they have their presentation up for us. The presentation is managing my rainwater, but I will tell you that these gentlemen were referred to me by Kevin Schaefer, from Executive Director of MMSD, and the reason that they were referred to me is because that I have made no bones about it, that I am a very, very large supporter of water quality initiatives. The committee that I chair of the mayors and village presidents about a year ago or so passed a resolution that said that something like Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, is one of the most coveted resources in the world, and that we should do everything possible to take initiatives to keep that clean and pure. And subsequently, I met with Mr. Bennett and Mr. Schaefer's personnel over at the library to work on how we can make Franklin basically the poster child for best practices in water quality management. As a result of that, these gentlemen have come from Illinois to be with us tonight. I would say that I should tell you that we have been picked out of all of these other municipalities in Wisconsin to have this presentation. And the presenter will, the presenters, will tell you that if in fact the city of Franklin was to embrace this type of program, that we might be the first in the nation to have such a program and to set kind of the standard for good water quality initiatives. So with that, I'm going to let the two gentlemen come forward, and their presentation is up, and I'm going to allow you to introduce yourselves. And if I could, just ask your names and addresses for the record.
I'm Eric Landon from 123 Laurel Avenue in Lake Forest, Illinois. And welcome. And thanks for having me here. And my partner, Steve.
I'm Eric. My name's Steve Houshier, 719 Lamington Avenue, Lamont, Illinois.
All right. So I'm Eric Landon, president of Landon Consulting, which is a global sustainability consulting firm. So we help organizations all over the world measure the financial benefits of conservation, both to business and to government. We help with strategy and helping people understand what's coming down and where the world's going and how we can adapt, and we help people adapt to change. So we all know change is coming, but we can be proactive rather than reactive. So I'm here today with my partner and Chief Operating Officer, Steve Houshier, to tell you about the Manage My Rainwater program, just give you an overview and introduction and what we're all about. So my background is environmental science and business, and I always knew that the two went together somehow, and it's about staying in business and making a profit, and the same thing happens in a municipality. So this is something we came up with to help you get there. So.
My name is Steve Houshier. I want to thank you. I'd like to present Managing My Rainwater Program after telling you that I'm new to the sustainability industry. I'm one of the founders of the web. I built one of the first 100 websites. I worked with Berners Lee and Vincent Cerf in designing some of the policies that we're using in the education system and throughout commercial enterprise and web. So I'm really a marketer. And when I got involved in that, I was all about change management. A lot of things had to change when you had the internet. You think about how businesses work and how you get directly connected to the public. Just before that, I was a direct marketer. So I was doing programs where we're sending you American Online discs in the mail. That was us. But we learned a lot about communicating directly with the public and learning how to motivate action based on our communications and our programs. So Eric Landon asked me to join him as he was pulling together the sustainability consulting company. And we've traveled literally all over the world working with people on water quality. And I'm happy to work with you because we do have, as Mayor Thomas suggested, we do have an opportunity to build a program in Franklin that will be one of the first in the country and show the rest of the world the way to connect the dots between the ecological impacts of where water falls and how we handle it financially, and that the standards are changing. Mayor Thomas talked greatly about water quality, and we know that when you're managing rainwater, where it falls on property and can be absorbed on that property, then nature can do its thing, filter that water, get it into the water table, and keep it out of the sewers and keep it out of the rivers, where it accumulates a lot of what we call crud. So we put this program together on a grant that we won in land and consulting, and maybe Eric, if you can drive the presentation for us.
I guess while they're sitting down, the way I'm looking at this is like the beginnings of a program. Just not concentrate on this being the entire program, but a start. I also talked to the gentleman that as a result of the Ryan Creek Interceptor being finalized, Mr. Bennett tells me that it's working, but I wouldn't know. But I trust him. He's been around for a couple of years. Okay. But this is going to open up a very large portion of Franklin that has been undeveloped. While there's probably some that may not believe this, I believe we should do this the right way when we're going to develop that property out there. And that, you know, one of the big things is luckily we have a great stormwater management program already in place. But if we are, the city decides someday to build business parks or there's retail centers or subdivisions, et cetera, this is, I think this is one of the ways that all of us need to be educated on how to do it properly. And I would like to see Franklin become that community that's going to be the textbook for how other communities should do that. And I believe these gentlemen are going to talk about that.
The the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District is the first to establish a wastewater discharge permit. What that means is that it's mandating green infrastructure. Every time it rains, this permit suggests that 1 million gallons be stored of rainwater. 3/4 of that needs to be handled on city gray infrastructure, if you will, through our sewers and retention ponds. The other 1/4 of it that makes it unique in the nation is that it requires property owners to install green infrastructure to keep the water that rains on their property, not going into the sewers. So MMSD is in a position of asking all the communities that they work with to establish programs that will motivate property owners to install green infrastructure on their property. And that's a trick, I might add. We're learning a lot about it. Even today, we learned a lot more. So I have to say that managing my rainwater program today was created to help MMSD meet the standard. And as Mayor Taylor suggested, there's lots of things that we're trying to figure out. But the mayor has asked us to work with him on establishing water quality standards for the community and represent them in this program and give homeowners a way to help attain those goals. Stormwater runoff carries more problems than just what our sewers can handle. The problem centers on solids and pollution carried from private property to receiving waters. And I believe that John Bennett has helped us identify places in Franklin where we can target homeowners, asking them very specifically to do things on their property that will keep the water on their property instead of running off, and meeting some goals along the way that MMSD has established, which Franklin is underneath. Right now, the numbers that we have, we looked at this as an average. We looked at about 8,150 properties, and we tried to come up with some goals for what this program could look like so we could present to you some objectives and some things to consider as we look at this kind of program for consumers or residential owners. We're suggesting that in Franklin alone, over 2.2 million pounds of solids and pollution, over 270 pounds per single family property, could be carried off every year. Now, those are rather large numbers, and I believe that the city is already doing many substantial things to reduce that crud, that we're calling it, in the way that we're managing stormwater now. But I think there's parts in Franklin where city property owners can help us a whole bunch, even improve the standards that we have in the community by installing green infrastructure. Every community in the country suffers from the same problem. We can't always ask the city to do things for everyone. Sometimes we have to do them ourselves. And the concept that we'd like to teach homeowners, and everyone's been trying to do this now for several years, is to make sure that when the rainwater falls, it stays on your property instead of goes off. We've got more reasons for doing this. We've looked at programs across the country to try to build a program under the grant that we won through the Forestry Department that we're presenting today. So we need property owners to understand and accept this new responsibility. MMSD has a mandate, if you will, a permit. The way that that's enforced today, because I get into measurement, say, well, how are we going to know that 3/4 of this was done by city and a quarter of it was done by Franklin, and how do we get credit for that? Where's the money if you're giving us a goal to hit? Is there financial help? And we're trying to work all those things out. But I think the idea is simple, that we've got to demonstrate a cost-effective outreach program targeting property owners that can have a significant effect on getting them to participate with us, accepting this responsibility, and working with us to devise projects on their property that will keep the stormwater on their property. Franklin can then be the first community to offer this and work with MMSD, and the work that we're doing here in Franklin will be used by many other communities. In fact, Eric and I have been on the phone the last couple of days. We've met with Mayor Tom several times, and we're trying to line up support throughout the region to work with the Green Bay Packers, who always give back to their community. And it's a wonderful opportunity for them to help us get our outreach program out to homeowners, teaching them about this new responsibility, what it means, what they can do.
And if I can, what we've talked about is this is a totally voluntary program.
Right now it is voluntary. We're trying to get ahead of the curve because we know Eric has had a hand in writing some of the Thank you very much. I'm learning all these acronyms and all these fancy words. It's kind of fun. He's helping to write some of the rules in Washington. And we happen to know the EPA is coming down with some new water quality standards. And we've been working with MMSD to understand how they want to do it and how they enforce the permit. And while we got to say we don't quite understand how it all works yet, but there are opportunities and there is money available, that if the city decides to do a certain kind of program, and with MMSD's approval as well, I think there's a lot we can do to get property owners to join us. In fact, we feel strong enough to make a goal in 5 years that we could get 9.4% of our property owners to join us by installing meaningful rainwater projects. We think that we'll be able to then take 10% of the runoff of their property from impervious surfaces and keep it from entering the sewers. We think by doing that, the five-year goals that we'll be able to divert 11.1 million gallons of stormwater from entering city sewers from single-family residential properties in the five-year span. We believe that we can identify 6.5 tons of crud that goes along with that that won't be going beyond the property, that will be filtered through the property, and it won't be a problem in receiving waters going into the Root River or Lake Michigan. The program that we'd like to launch, it sells fall. I'm sorry, I'm kind of a bulldog, and that's a little aggressive. We've been working with several people to try to coordinate several details, and they're suggesting that while Mayor Taylor was urging us to act as quickly as we could because we wanted to get these things implemented now that we understood what MMSD was asking us to do, there's practical coordination issues with other programs that have NASAP beginnings that we should know about before we act.
we've got a program that we think we can install that spreads a communication through the schools, through the park district, and through community efforts. And again, with the Green Bay Packers and helping us get the word out, it could be kind of fun this fall. And we'd like not to leave the fall season for starting our stakeholder outreach, where we would start to help homeowners understand how things are changing and where we need their help and why. Anyhow, we're thinking that a community outreach program supported by the Packers could be brought into the schools, where the schools could make projects that could be involved in the community and give the children something to learn about in terms of water quality and community involvement. We think we can bridge that with an innovative website system for planning that isn't going to take Mr. Bennett's engineering department and keep them on the street from rainwater. We're going to try to make it real easy so they don't have to put in a lot of time.
He says to me, what engineering department?
Yeah, there you go. Well, we were kind of told, you better do it this way or it's not going to fly. We also need your help in forming what's called an offer. I say this in marketing. When you go and you say to somebody, here's a value we want you to uphold. It's a change. It's new. And right now, this value has got to be connected to something. Well, we can connect to good feelings. And believe me, we're going to try to resonate that in our communications. But there's also a financial part of the logic stream. And that's when we all have to think about the business of how much money it costs to do this, to divert these gallons of water versus handling them on our city infrastructure. And since MMSD is asking us to figure out a way to keep 25% of this from hitting them, well, maybe what we can do is work together to figure out some kind of a financial incentive we can offer homeowners that will fund part of this. It'll at least give us the basis of an offer. If you do this, we'll meet you part of the way. We're not abandoning you. There's lots of sources of money out there if we're all creative. We've actually uncovered a couple of programs at MMSD that we have to look at very carefully and see if we qualify and how we can get some help in understanding how we can invest some money. We think we've got a model that everybody's looking at that shows for 5 years how we could establish a stipend or a refund of some sort that we give the consumer for activities they do today that will avoid future costs to the city.
Steve, can I jump in for a second? So is
everyone familiar with green infrastructure? Just as a concept, something like rain gardens for using permeable pavement instead of, you know, hard asphalt. So it's just different ways to let water infiltrate and soak in so it doesn't run off.
Like, well, I think we've talked about, we have several projects in Franklin with parking lots the water goes through instead of running off.
Why don't you click to the next slide for us? All right. This is the fun stuff, what I used to do as a web guy. And managing my rain garden would be a website where we can bring the public to. We'll explain the kind of projects that are available. It'll always be open. Since these are volunteer programs, we would create some kind of a project configurator where they'd be able to pick, design, and apply for a project. We'll have standards established in this model so that the system can automatically approve projects without engineering staff time. Say, I can see John smiling right now. And then we'll provide social media integration for participants and volunteers to share their projects and work in terms of community involvement so that we can get the message out, let people know how many gallons of water against our goal we're diverting, how much money we're saving, and how we're keeping the water clean.
Can I interrupt you for a
second? Please.
I just noticed in an article today, at least I think I read it correctly, that City of Oak Creek is looking at redeveloping the lakefront portion of the lakefront. And one of the things that they're going to use to try and stop the erosion is to have three rain gardens in parallel to be using that. So, you know, while we're talking right now about current residents, also try and get in your mind, if we were to build a large business park, rain gardens surrounding that, and we have the largest portion of Milwaukee County parks in our backyard with the Root River. So try and imagine rain gardens and initiatives that would all be in harmony with all the current projects that are out there and with all the land that we have in that area.
Thank you, Mayor. That was very well said.
See, I was listening during these meetings.
Yeah. You know, you said in harmony, and boy, that just makes me smile. I think the thing that we want to do, you know, we've talked with Interlock, who's a manufacturer of what's called permeable pavers and a bricks, if you will, and they can build driveways. Now, up here, we have a lot of clay in the soil, so rain gardens sometimes can be a problem. They're only going to hold about as much water as how deep we dig them and put rock in there and put dirt on top of it. That's a pretty big project for a homeowner to do. So, I mean, their acceptance, rain barrels, boy, they're really easy, but it's only 55 gallons. Not a lot. And a lot of them overflow. So while we get a lot of them, we think we got participation when it comes to measuring how much water we're really keeping out of the sewers. They don't really do that much. A drop in the barrel is what it might mean, though. But a driveway, on the other hand, if you're looking at the replacement market in town, you know how many driveways come up on average to be redone. If we can make that property owner aware of other ways other than concrete or asphalt, and we could show them a way and also provide somewhat of an incentive, I think that could store a huge amount of groundwater for us. And those are the kinds of things that we'd like to do. So we're going to develop a program where the homeowner learns about it through a stakeholder outreach program. That's part of what we'd like to launch this fall. In the spring, we'd like consumers to come, the residents to come to a website where they'll design and they'll submit their project. They'll buy supplies or they'll actually find contractors to help them do this work. They'll install their project. There's going to be a way that they're going to upload a photo and we're going to go figure out that they actually did what they said they were going to do and that it's all going to work. We're going to improve these things ahead of time and make sure that the engineering department isn't required to go check each one. But we'll make sure that we can measure these things, that they're installed. And that maybe there's some way we can give them a credit at that point, at the end of the process, and whatever amount we can work out. That's the big hitch in the giddy-up that I think we have to all decide. The Managing My Rainwater program contains the latest best management practices of green infrastructure. And we're trying to bulletproof this list right now and decide which are the most effective projects. And I think we've got to work with Mr. Bennett a bit more to understand the areas in Franklin that we want to target, because he's got a very specific area charted out, the way water falls and what part of the Root River it goes into and the different sewer systems and where we have retention ponds and where we don't. And we can work that out. So it's not everybody. It's certain places where we need to help. My big thing is tracking process. I like to make sure these things are measurable so we know that our money is invested and is done well. That's simply to start off with a stakeholder outreach program, that there'd be some component of that where we ask the people that are watching this to react in some way so we can measure it. And that would be taken all the way through to the point where they're actually accepting projects and those projects are installed so we can measure the program from beginning to end. I think we talked about driveways. We talked about Mayor Tom suggested that there were several commercial projects that were coming and larger projects to the city, and that we have the opportunity, if you will, to innovatively design some stormwater best practices on those properties and also kind of shine pretty good in terms of the whole ecological community. We've got some really cool ideas going, and I'm happy to be working with you on that.
Well, we have, I think I mentioned that through a contract, we have lands that have been donated to the city that are east of 112th Street by Waste Management that Jesse can talk a lot more about types of initiatives, but donated to be placed into a conservancy. So this also might be an area where we can look at rainwater, water quality initiatives.
So, if you could get to the next slide. We're moving along real well. We really appreciate the opportunity, as I said, to present this.
Because I appreciate you sitting on those hardback chairs out there, because I said I was going to try and get you in at 25 after, and I think it went beyond that. So.
Well, we're real happy to be here. We respect, you know, it's like still 95 degrees outside. And I remember myself saying, you know, I really wish it was warm. I really wish it was warm, and I know I'm going to complain soon. Well, that day came today. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to, as we said, introduce this program to you, secure an endorsement of this kind of activity that the mayor has asked us to implement. We think we have a good community outreach program. We've got a huge drawing card with the Green Bay Packers to play, and I'm sure we can get a lot of attention. I think that there's education and school program development that we've heard great commitments for throughout the region. We're working with the Alliance for the Great Lakes in bringing the best practices of stormwater management communication programs around the region, and even ways to measure them so we can make sure this is all the latest, greatest stuff. We've even solicited support from across the pond in the International Sustainability Unit, working with Prince Charles, who we met with this spring, and we're actually working on a doctorate program with him at Cambridge dealing with water quality. So we're pretty excited to work on fundraising. We're pretty excited about getting the communication out. And we'd like to understand how, you know, we can make this initiative fit within the framework of finances, what kind of an offer we can put together for homeowners, what kind of approach we want to take with some of the funds that we've uncovered from MMSD. You know, it's one thing to say that those funds are available. It's another thing to get them. Right. So we have to put programs together to make sure that that works. So there is some funding at that level. We think there's other opportunities we have to creatively put a program together. Our next steps, really, we really need to do that work first and explore all of our opportunities for understanding what projects are going to be best, where they should be targeted, and targeting those and getting those together in a program. I think we can get that job done by the spring. And we know no matter what across the region, with the new permit that MMSD has revealed, that all the communities are readying different types of stakeholder outreach programs, and that we might be able to leverage this big commitment that we have from the Packers in doing a program. In the meantime, we'd also like to put together programs for the schools and park districts to carry, and those are being written now. We're getting materials from around the country, and we'd like support in bringing those to through all the people here in Franklin that would help us ready those materials for Franklin residents, and frankly also bulletproof them for the rest of the region.
I did speak to a reporter today, and he was going to try and make it, but I think he had other commitments. Do you have materials that could be shared with the press?
Yes.
After the meeting? Okay.
Sure do.
And is there a website that's been developed, or you're in the process?
No, we have not developed the website. We're on the last stages of building this model, and we're working with Mr. Bennett right now to finalize the model, which is the mechanics of how we're going to put together the finances, what matters, what we're counting, what are all of our cost things. We're kind of close on that, but we're getting more input from a lot of different people on how that should be proposed to you gentlemen in terms of financial offers.
I'll turn it over to the other plan commissioners, but I do have a question for Mr. Landon, and that's that you kind of touched on it. And I went to a conference with the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Racine about a year and a half ago where we had the, I think it was the director of the EPA, was at Wingspan, I believe, or the regional director.
Okay.
And anyhow, she hinted that there could be major changes coming from Congress regarding water quality initiatives. So I asked voluntary, you said, well, today. And so is there a fairly good likelihood that there are going to be these sweeping changes that municipalities are going to affect it?
Yeah, it's coming.
Okay, so it's kind of like when Mr. Bennett brought in the stormwater management program, and he said, well, it's only going to cost you $4 million all of it. Budget, and we all thought he was crazy. He was way ahead of his time, and thank God we listened to him, because all of these changes from the state came forward, and if we would not have had that stormwater management program, we would we'd be up in creek without talent.
The Conservation Commission
concept of TMDL, which is total maximum daily load. So they're starting with a cap on the number of amount of people in second location. So each community will have a slice of that cap.
Well, and I think in one of our meetings, we talked about farmland. And while many people, including me, always think fondly of the farmlands, I remember going to a meeting where they said that there's more chemicals and pollutants coming off the farm fields than there are from golf courses that are putting herbicides.
Boy, how
many yards. We've been learning a lot about spread.
Yeah, so you may not think of runoff coming from farm fields, but actually probably the most crud.
It's the largest contributor of pollution to Lake Michigan now. We've hit all the low-hanging fruit in what's called source points. And I think we've done a very good job as a community around the lake in identifying those and going after them. The two other areas we have to worry about are urban runoff, which we're in some places in very good shape on, and other places we're not so good when it comes to water quality. Because it's not so much the gallons because of flooding, which has driven a lot of the conversation, or the overflowing of sewer systems because of sanitary and concerns about bacteria. So it's not just about quantity anymore, it's about quality. We don't necessarily have cost drivers for that. They may have these mandates, but we're still not sure about how they're enforced. So as you asked me about where's the liability and where's it coming, and what you just asked Eric, what I believe we're hearing from an awful lot of people is they're going to wait for the EPA to set it. And I think that's kind of dangerous. If I think, you know, you've already believed in Jack before. I mean, you know, what can I say? I think that, you know, that's kind of where we are again.
Well, Franklin has been the leader many times. In fact, we're considered the Republic of Franklin. Many of us kind of take great pride in that because we do have higher standards and things of that nature. So, again, I'll leave it up to the other plan commissioners to discuss it and ask you questions.
Yeah, did anybody have any questions for us?
Yeah. Alderman Schmidt?
Please.
You're talking about residents' participation in this, and it sounds like you're talking in terms of rain garden projects or different materials for driveways?
Yes.
Well, what kind of materials would you suggest for the driveways that would be more conducive?
Like the permeable papers, so that you're logging in, you'll have a gravel bed underneath. A geotextile, we call it. But that gravel bed is storage.
And on top of it is bricks. And the bricks are made in such a way when they interconnect, they have spaces between them. Plus, the bricks are made out of a permeable form of material that allows some filtration to go through it. But it's how they interlock and stay because of the way they're made, and they're then decorative. The idea is that when you develop the underlayment for the driveway, let's say, or even a patio, you're going to dig down and put rock. See, well, our problem is the soil. It's not easy for water to infiltrate clay-based soil. So, I mean, we want trees. We want things that go through and go down. Well, with a rain garden or a patio or a driveway, we have to dig out the dirt, put in some rocks so that it'll hold it, put things back on top of it, and then make sure water is directed to flow into it. You know, the driveways are perfect because those are huge sheets of water. I mean, fantastic amounts of water. So, you could take the water that comes off your house and pour it on your driveway with that kind of storage capacity, and that property is going to take way more than 10% of their rainwater. I bet we could get, you know, a majority just by driveways.
Another question then, residents are going to ask, how much is it going to cost me to participate? Or you're talking about incentives. Are there credits or something if they are involved in some expense to implement this? How are they rewarded for it?
Well, there's a few ways. First of all, our intention was to offer a financial incentive to the homeowner. And part of our grant was to be creative in finding that money. Our initial thought was you could do it with some kind of a credit against their sewer bill, stormwater bill. Of course, in Franklin, the way we assess that is different. There's a line item that combines both sewer and stormwater. And that money's spoken for about 72,000 ways over anything that we want to give up from it. So when we looked at that, we were kind of curious how, you know, how that would be seen as a future investment against a potential or a future cost. And, you know, trying to work on it that way and being foresightful. Another way to look at it is that there are monies available from MMSD based on valuized assessments and allocations. The problem is those monies aren't sustainable. They're one-shot deals or they're one-off programs. And, you know, I don't have a good answer for you completely, but I can tell you from a homeowner's point of view what it looks like. I think a garden, a rain garden, would cost them between $150 and $300. I think 2 weekends ago, I got out a shovel and I dug one in my yard to figure out how long it would take.
We're going to tell you about it. What do you need to walk?
Yeah, well, it, you know, I'm not finished yet. Let me just tell you, it was a big project. And I got to buy plants now. And, you know, the plants are probably the biggest expense other than digging it. If you dig it yourself, that's great. If you have a contract to come in and do it, it's a big deal. So I think, you know, with digging it yourself and spending a weekend digging, getting the rock, which is pretty cheap, and then the plants might be a couple $100, you could have a rain garden that could take on a quarter of a million gallons a year. Something substantial. The driveway is another example. Might cost 30% more than a conventional driveway. But because of the way the maintenance works on that, the way the pavers are worked and that they don't crack and like cement does, and you know, certain kinds of permeable surfacing like asphalt clogs up with dirt and isn't very effective in a very short period of time. Well, the permeable paver driveway has less maintenance. So over the lifetime of the driveway, it will be less expensive for the homeowner. We have several manufacturers helping us to tell that story. That's one of the reasons why we want to target homeowners. Being the direct marketer that I am, I figured we'd be able to find out the number of households that would be best to go after, knowing the driveways that need to be replaced, work with people in that business, and say, look, we want you to do permeable pavers as much as you can, and here's how we're going to help you and put a deal for the homeowner. And together we'll work, you know, your marketing department and ourselves facilitating putting a program and putting those kinds of things available. If we can get the garden centers to participate with us in offering discounts in the plants. And I do also know from MMSD that there are several programs they have where they've worked out discounts for supplies and materials for doing these kinds of projects, including rain barrels. The rain barrels were maybe $50.
Well, while you're trying to target the homeowners, let me just throw three projects out for you. Tonight, we had a project in here with our school.
I saw it, yes.
So, entire parking lot, everything's going to be dug up. I mean, we're talking acres of soil. Right now, there's no credit, there's no incentives for them building that impervious. Yeah, but right now there's none. Several months back we had a store that came in, Myers.
Yeah.
Okay. 33 acres of land with a parking lot. A couple days ago we had the Rock Sports Complex that just laid down all the asphalt and all the concrete for their parking lots. Had we had a program like this in place, it's possible that they may have able to compete for some incentives. And see, the city of Franklin has all of these potentially large projects coming in. So while, I guess from my perspective, I don't want to get totally focused just on the homeowner.
Yes.
I'd like to, you know, I've said this many times, it's the large projects that are yet to be developed.
Well, we appreciate that there's two parts to the MMSD mandate that's new. 3/4 of the million gallons per rain they want to handle on city infrastructure. A quarter of it's on residential. So this first program we're presenting tonight is the residential portion. The commercial program that we're looking at here can be very exciting, especially with a large paving project. I think there's some amazing things we can do there. But we're just beginning to work with several of the manufacturers and coming up with the cost models, because in a commercial side, they look at a shorter payback than I think the city would look at in terms of public infrastructure. So their payback periods are shorter. And we want to show the eco paving solution will be lower cost for them. And that's seeing 4 or 5 years into the future as some of these new standards are coming down, and you know there's going to be enforcement financially on them somehow. So I think we have to be foresightful, but I think there's also things we can do right now with a little bit of creativity.
Well, for the plan commissioners, the reason I asked these gentlemen to come in front of you instead of coming in the common council is because they will have a lot more time to spend with you than they will get at a common council meeting. And you're also, if I look at your backgrounds, you've had some pretty substantial experience in planning and in water quality management. I was kind of hoping that we could get a recommendation from the Plan Commission to the County Council tonight. I don't know if you're ready or prepared for that or if you'd like to ask more questions, but I just want to repeat that we were singled out as a community, the only community, for this initiative by the executive director of MMSD. If Franklin does not adopt or embrace this, there are other municipalities, I guarantee you, that will. So Mr. Knippel.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming.
Sure.
Very interesting. And just off the top of my head, I'm kind of a do-it-yourselfer. And when you develop your website, please include something in there for a homeowner to say, well, can I do it myself, rather than always thinking of contracting
it
out.
We're thinking it'll leave you a shopping list. You can take it alone.
Exactly. Yeah. And show them how to do it, because a lot of people are not real experienced, and I think that will generate a little more interest.
No, this is easy.
I agree. I found that myself, trying to figure out how to do this. And with all of our expertise, the two of us, you should have seen us with shovels in our hands. It was kind of funny.
I think it's great, because I could, right now, I could redo my sidewalk, which I wanted to do for lots of time, but I wouldn't do my driveway. But there's something that I could do, is my patio, my driveway, a rain garden. Well, those are three projects on one small lot where I've had a rain barrel. It didn't work out for me. I couldn't think of enough uses or get it to where I needed it.
Yeah.
But permeable pavers for a walk, patio, a rain garden, very easy to do. Can almost do it myself.
Well, we hope that these, I think if we teach homeowners what to look for, mm-hmm. Obviously downspouts got to be disconnected. I mean, we need somebody to think about the house and where the water comes off from gutters and what side it goes to. I think that's part of what we want to try to do in putting feet on the street, is having some trained expertise and trained eyes going around the neighborhoods, maybe with a packer,
Oh, sure.
And in uniform, knocking on the door. Can you imagine that? And showing people what they can do.
And some of the things that you had on your presentation, infiltration trenches, I've talked to neighbors that have water problems. There's all sorts of things that you can tie in. I know Jack would probably have a list of things that he gets calls from residents about, how do I keep the water on my property from doing this, doing that? And great opportunities to contain it, let it filter out slowly.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I'm all in favor of anything you guys want to do.
Awesome.
And especially if you've come from Illinois and you're going to talk with Packers.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, when I was a little boy, I was a member of the Evanston YMCA, and there was this fellow named Bart Starr who was our mascot. My uncle knew him and hooked him up. So every time the Packers came to Illinois to play the Bears, I was at the Drake Hotel in the 60s, and I have pictures on my birthday sitting on Lombardi's lap.
All right.
So I've been a Pat fan since I was 5 years old.
Okay, motion to approve.
Thank you.
No problem. Caller, did you?
It was a great presentation. Just a couple of things to remember that the plants themselves, a lot of times you don't even have to dig out as much volume as you think. Because the plants, you use the correct kinds of what they call clay buster plants. They
right.
actually penetrate the clay soil themselves. You just grow your storage. You don't actually have to dig your storage. And that actually reduces the cost of some of the doing those. You may not get it right away. You don't get that benefit.
Very sure,
yeah. Yeah, but you grow your own storage. That's been done in Franklin in several lots already. So.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm not hearing a lot of questions. I guess I would ask, is there a motion to advise the Common Council to take a hard look at this program?
So moved.
Okay. You couldn't get the Green Bay Packers to come to the next Tuesday's meeting, could you? I have a feeling that this whole place would be
I could ask, but I'm not sure what their response will be.
I'll wear my Lions jersey.
Oh, no. Oh, Dave, come on now.
Wait, they just declared bankruptcy, didn't they?
They did.
Hey, you know, to get in, maybe I could bring my birthday picture with Lombardi, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure he's a Packer. Yeah. All right, no further discussion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it, motion carries. Thank you very, very much for traveling from Illinois and spending all of the time with us. As you can tell from the previous meetings, a lot of this has to do with trying to work with Jack and his stormwater management program. He has made me a total believer in what he's done, and I think it's way, way ahead of his time. And hopefully, I think this is in the same vein. So,
we're happy to keep that forward momentum going, and we're anxious to continue working and making this program a reality.
Well, and I also like to, if you have time available in September, it's the second Monday of the month, but I think I'd like to invite you down to the ICC meeting, which is the Mayors and Village Presidents, because as I mentioned, we... all the communities passed a water quality initiative, and I think they would very much like to hear about the program.
We'd like to put that on our calendar, yeah. Okay.
All right, thank you again.
You bet, thank you. I'll give this to you then and if you need a soft copy, Eric, you can take your drive. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you. How about a round of applause for the guys from Illinois?
We're going to go to the draft spot now.
Oh, all right.
You know,
we take it back.
Yeah, I told Kathy, well, you know, she. By the way, can you get, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
And you did leave us a copy for the reporter, huh? If you can send it to Scott Meyer, he was the one that was asking about it today. Okay. We're back to the regular order of business. MLG Development, Inc., Mr. Fuchs.
This is a proposed CSM by MLG Development, Inc. to divide a 13.36-acre property located within the Franklin Business Park. In front of you should have a revised sheets 1 and 2 of the CSM, which is just renaming Outlot 1 to Lot 2. So a future CSM will not be necessary to develop the land. Staff has no objections to the revision. The city attorney has also provided a revised resolution reflecting that change. Both lots, lot one would be 5.7 acres, lot two, 7.66 acres, which...
Mr. Fuchs, just one second. I had mentioned Alderman Skaronski to you regarding green roof initiatives and all that. You may want to talk to him about... some of the things that he and Neri have done over the years.
Okay, great. So, great, thanks. Thank you. Okay.
I'm sorry.
The both lots do meet Planned Development District 18 standards, so staff is recommending approval.
Mr. Wozlowski?
Also, I had a couple of conversations with J. Michael Mooney of MLG Development. Part of that was a query as to why they denominated one of the two lots an outlot. And to make a long story short, there was some historical designation, probably for sure, dating back to when that area was a future phase of the business park and development. So that was changed to the name Lot 2. You've got new copies of CSM so doing, as well as a new resolution, and that is the only change to what was in the agenda packet. Also, Mr. Mooney asked that if he were not at the meeting, that I advise the commission members that the purpose, MLG's purpose in submitting the CSM application is because they have a developer who's interested in what's denominated Lot 1 here for development purposes.
Mr. Bennett?
Yes, I noticed that they have an indication on here, the water main easement, and they say along with a 30-foot-wide temporary construction easement. I think you could take that off. The construction is completed. So that easement is, has, by definition, has been vacated.
Which land is that on?
That's under, on the north end of the Lot 1, or excuse me, the east end of Lot 1, where it says a 20-foot-wide water main easement dedicated to the city of Franklin.
Okay.
Leave the rest of that out, along with a 30-foot-wide temporary construction easement. The water main's already in, and I think that just would confuse people, because that's already disappeared.
Okay, we'll work with
that. Yeah. Any other questions? I'd only add that I told the CDA just prior to the Plan Commission that we're down to about 15 acres, I think all of you know, in the business park, so a portion of this might become developable. So I tell you that for planning purposes, because there's been an agenda item out there about a strategy for future business parks, et cetera, et cetera. So it kind of falls into place for all of those initiatives. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second? Second, any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Okay, 7030. Well, I was trying to figure out why Mr. Liberta was here. Now I know. Mr. Liberta. Hello.
I actually came to listen, but...
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the 7030.
If I can, too, I can.
Well, you and Mr. Patterson kind of put the report together that they have. And I'll give a real small, short speech about, as all of you know... city for some time since the Tickner report and the Ford Franklin committee has made it literally the number one goal of the city to achieve 70-30, 70% residential, 30% commercial tax base. You have in the reports, depending on which column you look at, we may have been as high as, according to our folks, 27% point something. And if you take out the apartments, we're around 23% point something, which is fairly remarkable, given that I remember Tom Tickner saying that we would be very lucky to get to 25%. So, and the other thing that I think is, well, I was surprised that we had reached those goals. I was really surprised when I saw 27%. But is that, well, since we put in the Ford Franklin initiative, or Franklin First initiative, we've also been allowing subdivisions to be built at the same time that commercial property is coming in. I mean, it's true that we have Northwestern Mutual down on 27th Street, which was really helped, and a few other developments, but at the same time we allowed for condominiums to be built at Clare Meadows and homes, single family homes down by Wheaton Franciscan, and so I think we're pretty good, but I think it's important that Mr. Liberta kind of give you a brief explanation of the report. I think prior to that, Randy has been our guru on establishing the formulas and determining how close we are and how close we're not. And I guess I'd really like to hear from Randy tonight, too. So, Mr. Liberta?
What I saw in your package is really comprised of three things: a cover memo provided by the planning department, and then a copy of the packet that was referred to by the Common Council, including the council action sheets. And that has two of them, which is an executive summary by myself, Cal Patterson, and Paul Ratzenberg, the deputy finance director, sort of summarizing our conclusions. And then at the end is a sort of a detailed memo that its intent is sort of documenting for the future in very clear detail how we addressed each portion of the assessed valuation throughout the community and into what classification we put it in and why. So that if somebody says, well, you didn't think about this, you didn't think about that, we actually really went in excruciating detail, as I refer, just to make sure we broke it out. The conclusions are really summarized in that executive summary memo that identifies a slow but continued growth in the ratio. Some of that it becomes attributable to changes in the marketplace. As the economy has changed since 2008, you have had commercial properties retaining their valuation to a higher degree than residential properties, and so that does get reflected in the valuation. Whether that's the intent of the 70-30 ratio or not, if your goal is to achieve that, achieve a distribution of tax burden, the economy has been helpful in that regard. We also tried to provide some perspective in that number in two senses. We were able to take the formula and the methodology we came up with and get information for Franklin back to 2004 based on the assessment record. So that is summarized on the executive summary page. But we were also able to get the information for some other communities, Oak Creek, Wauwatosa, Greenfield, Brookfield, New Berlin, and Mequon. We picked those communities because they, either because of their proximity, their population, and general characteristics to us, and some of them to a degree based on their reputation, we thought it would be good perspective. And then there are some charts that then sort of lay out some of that perspective for you so that you can get a sense of a relationship between city tax rate and total tax rate as compared to that ratio valuation. And let's see if I can find the one I'm looking for. The last one is sort of total city tax rate with percent commercial property. That is, if you exclude Mequon as a bit of an outlier due to some of their characteristics, it does reveal a broad but a fairly evident trend of the higher the commercial property valuation, the lower the overall municipal tax rate applied. You just don't, not just the municipal, but tax rate from all tax jurisdictions, I think, is that category. So that's a very quick summary.
Any questions or comments?
So we are moving forward, right?
I think quite a bit. I was pleased to see how much, even at the 23% figure. And then the one column is obviously 27%, but 23 is, given that Tom Tickner said we'd be lucky to get to 25, pretty doggone good, and we hopefully are coming out of about a three-year global financial collapse. So, Mr. Ritter, you are and have been the guru of all this. So. Any comments?
So there's no real change here that I know of, other than the G7 class, which is now labeled as other, and in the past has been ag buildings and sites. And there's nothing in the tax roll records that I've been getting that tells you, breaks that down, how much of that is residential. This proposes to change that into the residential classification, which is fine if staff's analysis indicates that a substantial portion of that and the improvements in those properties are residential, then that would support making the change. In fact, it is an extremely tiny, it's 0.5% of the total assessed value and 0.75% of the residential value, so the impact of it is not significant. But that's really, as far as I can tell, about the only change that's being proposed here.
So the 23% figure for commercial is sort of accurate?
Yeah, I have had it at 2209. This schedule here is, I've been doing that for the last 15 years.
Which schedule is that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the one on the front, the second page?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, this one here.
We can still have copies.
I thought we were going to have a knockdown, drag out fight on this
one. Did the economy help us a lot with the collapse of the single family homes?
It helped us somewhat, yeah. Now, I have not looked. I did. I just got our reassessment notices fairly recently, and I noticed that rather curiously there didn't seem to be any summary of the impact on the city as a whole, at least in the material that I got. But the city did put a list of all of the 12,000 plus properties out on the city website, and I did download that. And it looks like for the city as a whole, we're down about 11.65%, which I'd like to have an explanation on, because the assessment ratio was 104 last year. So how did we get that far away from the assessment ratio? But that's a question for the assessment staff. I don't mean.
But he's in charge.
It does relate to this and give you some idea where this will go when we do this again next year. And I can sort of summarize that, because it does relate to the agenda topic. The revaluations that went out generally have residential property with about a 8 to 10% decrease overall, with commercial property largely being 0 or 1% decrease.
And that helps us.
So you're going to see a further shift. I don't know that that's to say the economy was a good thing for us in this regard. Yeah. But as far as shifting the tax burden away from residential properties, it will be a net result of that. One reason you see, if I told you 1% and overall residential at 10%, you did have a more significant drop in condominium values. So the 10% I gave you was non-condominium residential, whereas condominiums is more in the neighborhood of 20-25%.
Do you have an idea what this will do to our ratio?
I haven't run it back through this formula yet.
That was a request from the CBA as well.
And it's probably something I would do after Board of Review. We could give you a preliminary number based upon the closure of open book in 2 weeks. But it will have a positive impact on this ratio.
Alderman Schmidt and Mr. Fowler.
Our ultimate goal of 70-30, is that something that... that we are striving towards the 2025 master plan, or is there any way of projecting exactly how long it could take?
I went into that with the CDA, and that's that after 2.5 years of work by the comprehensive master plan, actually this group, there's a common thread all the way through that document that talks about the goal being 70-30. One of the questions to Mr. Fowler, but one of the questions that came up at the CDA was, should we change the goal to be from a citywide goal to a specific school district, or not. The CDA voted to keep it based on a citywide basis.
Toward the alderman's question, one sort of project I hate to tip my hand that I've been working on it because I'm not sure yet if I'm going to be successful, but one of the little projects I have going is taking new valuation changes since about 95 and breaking out those changes on a per acre basis between residential changes and commercial changes. We can then apply those ratios to what the comp plan and planning department says are the vacant areas in each of the classifications that could be developed. And we can look at, is the difference that we're getting in commercial valuation in the current kind of development area going to achieve the goals we want? So I'm working with GIS assessing who's developing a map of all those parcels with building changes since 1995. And so it'll take us some time to do that because it's sort of one of those projects that you have to find time to do. But I think it will be, it was sort of a good question I saw posed out of this. So what does that mean? Will we get there? And this was a way I thought we could see if we can get there. So it'll be a while before that comes out because it is secondary to our primary workload, but it is something that we're looking into.
Wasn't it also in your report, or was it at the council level, that if in fact the council hasn't said that they want to continue with the 70-30 goal, so I'll be asking for a recommendation from the Plan Commission tonight about this. But I think like I said, I don't remember if it was from an alderman or if it was within the report itself, but I thought someone said that the only way that you're going to be able to get to the 70-30 goal is if we build new business parks. Just having the retail centers and commercial development here and commercial development there isn't going to get us to that 30% goal. Mr. Fowler,
just a couple of questions. On graph one, I'm a little confused about what the percentage represents on the y-axis, I believe it is. I'm sorry, I just...
No, it's okay.
I see the different school districts at the bottom. There's a red line.
That is the y-axis is the residential assessed value by percentage.
So why is the Oak Creek Franklin School District down at 50%, whereas the Franklin School District is the highest up at the top? I guess I was trying to figure that why that assessed value would be so high. They're up at the 87 to 85, while Oak Creek Franklin School
District. No, the residential assessed value portion for Oak Creek, instead of being 78%, is only 50.
Yeah, the 50s.
Yeah, so it does have a lower residential percentage because much of our commercial...
So that represents the actual value of the residential property in comparison to the commercial.
Right.
And I really like the fact that you broke out the graphs to show, or at least graph three, where it shows the Franklin School District. And I still have great concerns when I still see the Franklin School District looking at an 80-15. I mean, it's great that the city gets this goal of 70-30, but if looking at where the new residential development's going, it all seems to be going, unfortunately, in this Franklin School District, and we're getting the commercial development still going on 27th Street where we have it. I'm really hopeful that as we continue to see, like the Franklin School District shows the assessed, I'm assuming that's $24 per $1,000 of assessed value.
Yeah.
We still are higher than both the Franklin and the Oak Creek, because I hear about it all the time from my neighbors, about why we pay more property. They always assume, Randy's pointed out to me on several cases how wrong they are, but sometimes they feel like they're paying more. And I understand the fact that if we do get more business development in the Franklin School District, there is still the cap, as Randy has explained to me that as well. And even if we it would seem to still might balance this number on graph three. Our number might drop if we could get some more business development, let's say at like Loomis and I 100 and some other areas.
Mr. LeBert?
The trick there is you in looking at that commercial industrial manufacturing, You have to deal with both the supply and the demand issues. You're going to continue to have demand issues on your existing commercial corridors, such as 27th Street, which are ripe for it. So the question may be whether or not the Common Council and the city as a whole chooses to pursue some additional supply issues, you know, in, for example, the southwest area of the city, where we're now going to have some ability to do that with the sewers, to create some potential for greater demand out there by having parcels that are ready for development of that nature.
And if I could just follow up, then what my concern with there would be, yeah, if we do a TIF or a bid, again, we have a delay in the tax relief that I would think, and someone could point out that maybe that's not going to be correct, but if we do a bid or a TIF in those areas to bring in that development, there's still a lag of 10 or 15 years or whatever that TIF or bid might be set up for, that we would see any relief for the residential property taxes or increased income for the school system. Maybe I'm wrong. Go ahead.
By definition, I have to suggest that, at least to a great extent, I would think you're mistaken, only because by definition the TIFs are established. The TIFs are established if with the premise that you get to do this because of the development wouldn't otherwise happen if you don't. So it's not that you're creating the TIF and then not going to capture it. It's that if you don't create the TIF, it won't happen anyway.
Okay.
That is sort of a general premise and requirement of the TIF law, that you have to have those conditions.
Well, that's why kind of like the Meyer didn't ask for anything when they came. I know it didn't happen, but when they came, they saw it as the potential of that area in and of itself was enough of a lure to bring in a commercial or business development.
To be perfectly frank, that's why I was looking at it, because it wasn't a TIF and there was no incentive.
So it would have been, yeah, so I'm hoping we can find other businesses that might, because we are perfectly suited in some ways between some of the developments going to be occurring to the southwest. But I'm an environmentalist, I'm not a business guy. It's been pointed out to me on numerous occasions when I get myself down these blind alleys, but it's just been a concern of mine for a long time that we don't seem to get that business and commercial development in that Franklin School District. And they're struggling right now with a budget deficit in that school district. And I think, as I've said, it's really important to the city of Franklin that we have a great school district, because that also will attract businesses and residential, and the kind of residential and the kind of business. The people that came in for the estate to split their large property said they stayed because the referendum passed. They would have left if the referendum hadn't passed, but they stayed here because of that referendum passed. So Randy can tell you all the stuff I said wrong.
Fred, did you have a hand up?
No, I didn't, but I'll make a comment anyway. I think it's very important that we encourage commercial development in the center part of the city. That's been, I agree with Commissioner Fowler, that's where we need it. And however we can do it, Mr. Deedle was talking about developing a shopping list of properties that he could do on the GIS or on the information system, so they were ready to go when somebody came asking, do we have anything that can fit their needs? So I think that'll correlate with a lot of the statistics, and you can look and add it up and get it going with Mr. Deedle. And let's put them on the web and let the people know what we have.
Yeah. Well, and there's, I get this comparison quite often, especially just recently, us in Oak Creek. There's developments going on in Oak Creek, but they're, I understand, they're all in TIF districts. One of them has to do with a whole lot of apartments and a big box. And what you just said about Myers, we were not real interested in looking at incentives or a TIF district for them. So, I mean, when you're doing the comparisons on economic development, it's good to do apples and apples, not apples and watermelons, bananas. I'm sorry, you have the floor.
No, I'm.
All right. I think I'd like to do what I just did at the CEA, and that's first question is a recommendation to the Common Council. Do you wish to stay with the citywide goal of 70-30, or do you wish to more narrowly tailor it down to the Franklin School District?
Tailoring is nice.
Well, you say all the time.
Mr.
I would be a proponent of that, but I think you start to balkanize the city. I think it already has enough issues between people feeling the taxes aren't fair now between the school districts and to point it out in such a dramatic way, saying, well, we're really going to focus on this in your school district. I don't think that's correct, but I do hope, and I've seen progress being made, that we are working to get commercial development in the center city. I just want to make sure, and I would compliment the bearers of this document to show those different schools. I think that's excellent to show. It shows the need for that. I think as we see that, and city leaders and civic leaders have worked with the school board to be sure we can keep this moving forward to get that development.
Well, and I only get one chance to ask you these questions because the council that we have, for the most part, they're in for 3 years. So I seriously doubt that you won't be able to ask the same question for at least another year.
If I could just one follow-up, I would be interested to see once the referendum passes and we get the school district and the new high school, at least I would be interested to see if there's any uptick in development that we see that could be attributed to that. Maybe it's impossible. It's just such a small part of it that might be interesting to map that.
Well, again, there was a comment made at the CDA about that lots and lots of people are about Franklin. It's just what the person said was very, very a difficult place to do business and to retain business, according to, I believe the person that said that. But I really have a lot of interest from people wanting to bring developments in. Looking over at Alderman Schmidt, because I just had a meeting with him, and he knows that that's the fact. Although a lot of it has to do with apartments, and some of it has to do with apartments and wanting incentives for apartments. But there's a fairly large interest here, and I'm also being told by people that are in the commercial real estate business, some of the top people, that there's a lot of interest in high-tech businesses coming to Franklin, but we're down to 15 acres, folks, for the business part.
Well, and that's something that we should discuss, but I'll phrase this maybe a little bit differently. I would agree that we should recommend to the town council that they keep it a citywide approach. We got into the school district issue. That was one of the, problems back in the 90s when this whole thing started. There were some people who were very strong advocates of looking at it on a school district basis and trying to do. I would agree. I think government goes wrong when they try to split people up and do one thing. They use the resources of all for the benefit of a few or only a group. We still have the land in the Franklin School District. Its turn will come. It's out there away from. We don't have any railroads in the city. We don't have any freeways in the city. The closest access to the freeway is along 27th Street. It has some natural advantages that we're just never going to have, or at least not anytime in the foreseeable future in the Franklin School District part of the city. But its time will come. The land in the other part of the rest of the city will run out at some point. I would agree we ought to pursue another business park of some sort, because I think over all the years that I've been in Franklin or been aware of what's been going on in Franklin, we've probably done two things well that helped, that you can demonstrate helped the goal. One was the business part, and the other is not approving previous applications for development on what ultimately became the Northwestern Mutual land. And those are the things I think we need to do. We need to make sure that businesses are going to make their own choice about where to come. We need to make it essentially easy for them to choose Franklin. And that's what we did with the business part. We had land available with utilities available. They could just come in, they could buy a variety of sizes of lots or multiple lots that they could purchase. Same way, essentially, with the Northwestern Mutual site, it didn't have sewer, but we were able to get sewer to it. So that's what we need to do. We need to make sure that it's going to be easy for businesses to come here when they choose to come here, because ultimately it's going to be their choice, and other communities are going to want to attract them as well. We just need to make it easy for them. The business park did that. We need to look at I'm not necessarily saying business park is the only option, but we need to look at steps that we can take to make it easy for land transportation access, utility access, developable land, that it makes it easy for businesses when they're looking for a site. Here's one we can go to. We can move on it quickly. We can get where we need to do. If we do that, then that will be, I think, the best thing we can do. And especially if we don't have to add incentives on it as well, although you could say, well, with a TIF district or a TIF-funded business park, yeah, that was an incentive. And if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. But I think the real key is whatever it takes to make sure that there's land available with utilities and with the transportation access, because that's those are the things that are going to sway businesses that need to come here. So we need to look at where our roads are. We need to look at utility extensions. Certainly getting sewer, the Ryan Creek interceptor, in place. But then, you know, there's a lot more development that's going to, needs to connect the various parcels of land to that sewer. So there's much more to be done, but I think that is, especially since we're down to such little land left in the business park, I think that is something that we need. My goal, certainly would support a recommendation to County Council to keep the 70-30 on a citywide basis. The reason I started doing this, all those years ago, was we had spent, I understand a lot of people here weren't involved in that at the time, but we had spent a lot of time, several Saturdays, and hiring consultants and doing studies and all that kind of stuff, strung out over many months. My goal in doing this was to hope that at least once a year we'd come back and take a look at it again and say, what kind of progress are we making and what do we need to be doing in the next year in order to take the next step towards achieving the 30% non-residential goal. I've been sadly disappointed that it's never really worked out, but that is, I think, the missing piece. Although we've had the goal all these years, we've never had an annual action plan to say, what are we going to do in the next year, either to achieve the goal or to move towards achieving the goal? So that's what I'd like to see a recommendation to the Common Council be. Yeah, stick with the 70-30 goal, but let's have an annual action plan for what are we going to do in the next year to move towards achieving it. We integrated it into the comprehensive master plan, and I certainly would encourage, to the extent the staff has time to do it, to try to do some kind of projection to give us some sort of insight into, well, if we develop according to that plan, where is that going to get us? But even that, I would still prefer to have a process for an annual action plan that says, here's what we're going to do in the next year to actually try to achieve this goal or to move towards achieving it. To me, that's the recommendation.
I'll tell you, as the mayor, when this plan commission put together the comprehensive master plan for the city, made its recommendation, and the common council said, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that is the plan. And we are doing everything we possibly can to make that reality, if possible. So, it's all laid out, and the areas are laid out. When parties come in, that's where we're basically telling them to look at. So I don't, unless the Common Council tells me differently, that's where the staff is going, that's where I'm going. And Mr. Fuller,
might be a good place where, we want to have the 70-30 goal citywide, but maybe the action plans can be slightly tweaked for the different school districts, because each of them might have different, needs, but there would be different challenges in each of the different, because the 27th Street Corridor does not have as many challenges as a center part of the city. So the action plan might be a little different for each of those areas. I don't know if you have to identify them, but there would be, you'd be flexible enough for that action plan to deal with those issues or the challenges that you have in different parts of the community.
That could be, Frank, that 27th Street is going to have the advantage when they put the Elm Road interchange in. That's going to be, I think, an enhancement to the redevelopment of that area. That's essentially the only significant amount of undeveloped land left. The 27th Street Corridor, the rest of it would be redevelopment, but I think I don't know that we need an action plan for that area, because just putting that freeway interchange in there, I think, is going to be...
Well, I would have said that, but I didn't want to be that, I didn't want to...
And if we're going to have an action plan, it should focus in other areas.
While you two guys are having a conversation, Alderman Schmidt has patiently waited for his turn.
No, as far as what our incentives are, what are we doing to strive towards achieving that objective? Isn't that what we have, like the Forward Franklin for, to pursue those, to determine a game plan for us to move forward on those objectives for achieving it?
Well, actually, it's all defined in the ordinance, and I'd say the They're supposed to be assisting the CDA, but retention and recruitment of businesses. My understanding is the only party that can actually do bonding, like determination, is the Community Development Authority. Again, I'm getting this comparison all the time, so now I'm going to address it this time with Oak Creek versus us, and there's going to be a report coming in on this. In Oak Creek, they have everything under the CDA. They have for years. It's not 20 different tents and 20 different umbrellas. It's under one. Somehow, in Franklin, we have to have 40 different organizations, and then we say, how come we can't get anything done?
Didn't you find it, I think, in Sherwood, they had one entity that dealt with that, that worked together.
Yep.
And that, they seem to be able to move much, they had a little more nimbleness in how they were able to deal with, quickly changing situations.
Well, I think reality is over the course of the, perhaps not so much in recent years, but over the course of the history of the Economic Development Commission and the CDA, we had a lot of the same people on both for a period of many years, I think. And they contributed greatly to the city, no question about that. But we also had a lot of land available in the business park, and that's, I think, the thing that, you know, the dwindling amount of available land there is something that needs to be addressed. If the CDA is the group to do it, that's fine. We need to look at somehow creating an umbrella of the CDA and, you know, and integrating in, you know, more members or consolidating the various activities in that group, and that's certainly something the council could consider, yes.
One thing I have found out is that, one, business wants to talk to the mayor. Doesn't matter who the mayor is, they want to talk to the mayor. So they want to get an answer because the mayor directs the staff. Two, the more you take politics out of these committees, Randy has said it many times, the better things will occur. And funny coming from a politician, but business does not want to go through politics. Business does not want to be dragged through the mud. And trying to get good people that want to be involved in economic development like we saw in Sherwood. That's why you have to have it under the CDA. I mean, if it takes having the mayor off of the CDA, great. If it takes all the citizen members, great. Whatever the formula is to make it work. But you cannot have 50 different boards and commissions. And if you're going to have, well, I would rather have it in my district than their district, then, you know, biggest problem. I mean, we've had a lot of developments that have come into the city that were passed by the Plan Commission and rejected by the Common Council, not because they were not good projects, but sheerly because of politics. Politics and only politics. So it's amazing the things that comes out of a mayor's mouth when you're in office for 8.5 years.
Could part of our recommendation be creating that group? Could that be a recommendation? Are we overstepping our boundaries?
I think on this particular agenda item we are, but I think I'm looking for a motion about one. Is there a motion to recommend to the Common Council that, one, that we continue to go for the 70-30 goal, and maybe as part of that, and that we do so on a citywide basis?
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all.
Any way you can add that annual review that Mr. Ritter was talking
about
to that?
Sure. It's your motion.
I'll leave the motion as it is, but we could certainly do another motion that will address other matters.
Okay, that's even better. All right, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Ritter?
Okay, I'll make a motion to encourage the Common Council to, you know, direct the mayor. The city should adopt the practice of having an annual action plan of steps to be taken to move towards achievement of the 70-30 goal. And what was the
yearly?
Annual.
Annual review.
And what was the other thing we've been talking about?
An umbrella group.
Wait a second.
Yes, yes, yeah, and consolidate the economic development efforts under the CDA.
Your second?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries.
But thanks for a great report.
Thank you. It really is it's a great report.
There actually would be a third motion that would be very useful. Just just because one of the questions that came up and that this memo report attempted to address is, what is the definition of 70-30? And in fact, the Comprehensive Master Plan has as one of the goals to achieve is define 70-30. So I think it would be appropriate for this commission, if it agreed, to recommend that the Common Council adopt the methodology set forth in the June 12th memo as the methodology for defining the set, the ratio.
Mr. Wazlow.
In short, does that mean that staff recommended method would be to use the assessed value as reported to the state, accepting that multi-unit developments would be included with residential and non-commercial?
In summary, yes. But
okay.
the memo actually has...
And at the CDA,
yeah.
That was brought up in the CDA.
Yeah, but that would be something that is called for in the Comprehensive Master Plan for the Common Council to define that, and this memo in great detail attempts to do that.
Basically, what we had a definition of residential, and then everything else was non-residential. So we had the residential, non-residential split. Now what we will have essentially is a definition of what is commercial, and then everything that's not commercial is... So where it's been residential, non-residential in the past, this would be commercial, non-commercial. And we're just taking the G7 class out of what has been non-residential and putting that into residential. Other than that, it remains the same. The apartment complexes, although commercial on the tax roll, have been residential for purposes of this calculation.
I would still make my motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion. Yeah, can you read back the motion, please?
I didn't get off.
I'd suggest a motion to recommend the methodology set forth in the June 12th memo from the Director of Administration be used to define the 70-30 ratio.
That's your motion?
That is my motion.
Who was the second?
Mine.
Mr. Knippel, that's your second?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. The complete streets. Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
No.
Second. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying
aye.
Aye. Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.
I didn't screw up that.